Welcome to America's Jobs Team. At Consultant Connect, we believe the greatest force for change is a job, but it requires amazing, talented economic developers. Each week, we will go deep with America's jobs heroes on their leadership journeys, with the belief that when leaders get stronger, their communities thrive.
Welcome, everyone, to the America's Jobs Team, powered by Consultant Connect. This is Carla. On today's podcast, we have an opportunity to talk to Courtney Ross. And Courtney is the Chief Economic Development Officer at the Nashville Area Chamber of Commerce. And she currently is the lead for business recruitment, retention, expansion, you name it, she's got it. They also have been working hard on talent recruitment, as many other areas around the world and cities are experiencing this talent shortage, also working on that talent recruitment and retention. And what's really cool is Courtney has worked in several different communities, but has found her place in Nashville and has a great leadership story and a lot of leadership insight for leaders young and old. And I hope that you take away as much as I always take away from every conversation I have with Courtney. So tune in. Hey, everyone, it's Carla, and I am absolutely thrilled because today we had an opportunity to have Courtney Ross on the phone. And I know many of you in the listening audience know about Courtney or know Courtney personally. She is really well known in the industry and lives and works in Nashville. So, Courtney, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
I'm great. It's so great to be here. And we'll just dive right into the fact that I'm a podcast junkie. So I love this medium and I'm really excited to be on here.
Yeah. Well, podcast junkies unite because I am too, obviously. Right. And I am just really excited to pick your brain about your leadership journey and hopefully just get a few nuggets of insight that you might have to share with other people that are in the industry. I know you've had a really successful run in Nashville, and I just think other people can learn from the energy and the just dedication and strategy that you bring with you everywhere you go and your ability to lead a great team. So I'm excited to hear a little bit more about how you got here and where you're going. So if it's okay with you, I'm just going to start throwing some questions your way.
Perfect. Let's do this.
Okay. So before we dive into some of my leadership questions, I want the listening audience to know a little bit about your journey of getting into economic development and how you landed in Nashville. So if you can give us just the, you know, like real quick 30-second, how did you land here version, that'd be great.
So my journey started back in 1997. So going way back to the 90s. And I graduated college. I'm from Tennessee originally, from Memphis, Tennessee, and I went to the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville and had a great time there and majored in journalism and graduated, wanted to move back to my home state, but didn't necessarily, wasn't ready to go home just yet. So I had an aunt that lived in Nashville and she offered me a free place to stay. And so I did a little couch surfing for a while I looked for a job and ultimately found a job at the state of Tennessee in, you know, really entry-level role at the governor's office at the time, and, you know, just was thrilled to have a job. And soon after, a few years in, or actually before then, I quickly realized that the folks over at the Economic Development Office were having all the fun, and I love to have fun. And so I literally started figuring out who was over there and what they were doing. And at the time, we had some really exciting automotive announcements in Tennessee going on with Saturn down in Columbia, Murray County, which is now a GM facility. And I truly was just interested in what was happening. I was starting to pay more attention to what was going on in the news. And I just couldn't believe that that was a job. I couldn't believe that that was really, and I do think that so many people in this industry have fallen into it really strangely. And I'm no exception to that. So I ultimately got a job over there after a few years. There was an opening. I applied and got that job, and I've been doing this ever since. So I went back home to Memphis for a job there and met my husband, and we then moved to Austin, Texas for his job. And I was connected with actually a former chamber president from Nashville who was then and is still running the Nashville or the Austin Chamber. And he was kind enough to hire me. And so that's how I got into the chamber work in economic development. And then my husband's job moved him back to Nashville, which we were thrilled about. because he works in healthcare and this is a healthcare mecca. And so they were kind enough to offer me a job at the Nashville Chamber, and I've been here 11 years now. So very short story as I fell into it because it looked like everybody was having so much fun. But
I love that. I love that because, you know, it is kind of this industry that people just fall into and everybody's story is cool, but we don't talk a lot about how much fun it really is and how if you were sitting in a lot of other governmental positions, you might not have as much fun as you kind of are able to do in economic development. And just the work is so meaningful.
It's very fulfilling. And that was the one thing is, and we'll get into this, but I don't think work also has to be boring. We work really hard and we'll get into that. So it doesn't mean if you're having fun, you're not working hard and accomplishing really big things, but we really enjoy being a part of the creating job process. And that's really what's kept me in it for this long, for 20 years now.
Yeah. Well, we've always gotten along really good, but I can now see why, because we both love podcasts and we both like to have a little fun while we work. So far, so good. We're clicking on all cylinders. So I am going to ask you a question about leadership today, because as you mentioned, you've been doing this for a little while, and leadership today, even in the time that I've been doing economic development, which is you know, a little bit shorter than your timeline, but it's changing and it's hard. And there's a lot of different challenges just based on, you know, kind of where we're sitting in now almost 2020. What do you think is one of the biggest challenge that is facing leaders today?
I think there's always going to be tremendous challenge in leadership. And if you care about doing it well, you're never going to stop trying to figure this out. But I really believe, and I know there's been other times that this has been the case, but I really think that leading across multiple generations is not only a challenge, but a real opportunity for leaders right now. And I think it's one of the biggest missteps that it's made by not truly trying to understand all these different generations that are in the workforce. I'm a very solid Gen Xer, and my team will tell you very firmly that I am the epitome of Gen X. I just fit it to a T, so I've got to always be conscious of that. But my boss is a baby boomer. I have a team full of millennials and Gen Xers, and we all have very different styles. And it doesn't mean that any of us do anything worse or better. It's just different. And I think we have to use that opportunity to really understand how to lead across generations and use each other's strengths and I don't know, maybe weaknesses to help build each other up. And so that is something that's always rattling in my mind. And I know we've talked about that at economics, and we've done things that I just love listening to podcasts about leading across generations. So I'd say that's not only just the biggest challenge facing leaders, but also, and most importantly, the biggest opportunity that we have.
Yeah. And I definitely think that is important, especially in economic development, because, you know, we need more economic developers, and, you know, we end up losing a lot of economic developers to the private industry, and we need to be able to retain and find it new. And that means the ability to bring people up quickly. And in order to do that, we're going to have to be able to work well across generations. And that is tricky. And especially because it is an industry that was for a very, very long time really dominated by older white males. Just being honest, it was. And so we're starting to see that transform. But that means even as a profession, we have to, you know, kind of utilize that and overcome that challenge and really view that as an opportunity. I like the way that you put that. And that's great.
Yeah.
So when you think about, you know, leaders, I know that there's probably leaders that you have really respected and kind of use as an example. And I'm curious if there's one person that has a characteristic that you really believe that every leader should possess. Who is that person that has it, and why is that characteristic so important?
So I've worked for so many amazing leaders, from both in the political realm to mayors and governors to CEOs of chambers. And so it's, you know, it's interesting that they're all different. Every single one of them is different. And I love that, because I've learned, you know, so much from all the different leadership styles. As soon as you figure out that's the one, you know, you notice something else about someone else. So this one's really hard, because this one's hard to find just one. But I always go back to my very first leadership example, and that is my father. And it really is not just, you know, kind of in our family unit, if you will. He's, you know, the oldest of seven boys. He's kind of the leader of our, you know, extended family now that my grandfather and grandmother have passed away. So he's kind of like that patriarch, if you will. He'd kill me if I said that. But he is. He's like that patriarch. But then he also had this tremendous career. And really, I was able to watch how he led. And the way that I, you know, a lot of people don't get to see how their dad works or how they're operating in a business, but he always brought us with him, and I knew his team, and they would always give me feedback like, I love working for your dad. And as older I've gotten, I've kind of started prodding him and prodding people that have worked for him. He just retired in January. And it really came down to, he was selfless. So he always put the team before himself. And that to me is kind of the common theme. It was never about him. It goes back to the very old, there's no I in team. It's always all of us. And he's never taken credit for anything that didn't involve his entire team. And I try and do that. But I've also seen that through, you know, former Mayor Dean, who was here in Nashville for two terms, 8 years. He led during our flood and really, you know, just encouraged other leaders in the community, including our CEO, Ralph Schultz, to lead the business community. And it was just so inspiring to just put yourself aside, put all your political ambitions aside, and put everybody else forward. And I've tried to emulate that. And I try to do that with my team, that every win that we have is not about one person. It's about, we all worked on this together at some point.
Yeah. Well, it's just me and Faye here in the podcast studio. And it's a good thing, because I kind of got teary eyed. Dad stories in general get me, but that one really got me. I mean, what a great example. And for you to be able to grow up under that kind of leadership. And I feel fortunate because I have a very similar story. And I just told that to our team the other day, and I teared up seeing my own dad story. But it is amazing to be able to see somebody who is able to be so present at home, but also be so well respected in their job, and to balance that well.
It is. And it's, you know, we're both working mothers too. And I think that's, you know, it can be really difficult, particularly for working mothers. And I know that's stereotypical, but it's the truth.
Yep.
There is a different standard for us. And that kind of being able to pass that on to my children is also really important. And so as hard as I work, I'd really try and balance it all, but I'm never successful at it. However, I keep going back to, well, look at what they're learning from, you know, a strong working mother and, you know, someone who has a great team that she loves to work with every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, I personally struggle with that same thing. And I just keep telling myself, you know, I am doing a good job. I know that. I mean, you're so easy to pull apart and be like, well, I missed that one thing. But they are, like you said, they're seeing a strong working parent, and they are seeing that balance and that desire. And I think that over the long haul is going to be really good for all of them.
We're all going to need therapy at some point, but they'll make it.
Yeah. I most people do.
That's right.
We all have stories of growing up that we look back and we're like, what? My parents let me do that? Where were they? What were they thinking? Okay. So back to leadership. We've all seen, you know, leaders that have had a moment or have said something, done something, or just have a trait about them that has kind of derailed their careers. And do you have an example? And it doesn't have to be, not an example of an actual person, but an example of a characteristic that you have seen, you know, kind of derail somebody's career or just leave a bad taste in your mouth. And how do you guard against that characteristic?
Yeah, it's kind of going back to my Gen X statement. I'm just really glad I didn't grow up with social media, because I feel like that's derailing a lot of careers right now. And that's so unfortunate. So let's all be grateful for that. However, I think this is almost, it's, you know, the positives of leadership, selflessness, putting others first, you know, no I in team. It's the exact opposite. It's putting your own best interest ahead of everyone else's. And so that's what I have seen derail, you know, whether it's people I know or people that I've seen on TV. It's really about, you know, not working as a team and not putting yourself in front of everyone. It's as simple as that. It's kind of like going back to the golden rule. And it really is as simple as that. You've got to work together, because nobody can do this alone. And there has to be someone that's leading the charge, and there has to be someone that's accountable. But it's just, especially in economic development, there's You cannot be a one-person show for any project, for any initiative, for anything. There's nothing that we can do by ourselves. And so just that attitude is what I've seen have people shorten their careers.
Yeah. And it's so unfortunate because it seems like something that should be so basic and just common knowledge. But as people grow in leadership, you see more and more people sometimes. And I think it's out of fear of failure that they start hoarding isn't the right word, but it's like keeping everything real, real close and feeling like they have to do it all and be it all. And I think it's sometimes fear of like, if somebody knows my weaknesses, then I'm outed, you know, or if something happens and it'll be my fault. And so I have to do everything. And that's just simply not the truth. And I think you put it out there really well to the listening audience that it seems basic, but you have to stay focused on it and keep yourself in check on it because people slide into that behavior. It's not something you just wake up and decide one day that you want to do. It's like a slippery slope.
It is. I think you also have to be really self-aware of what your weaknesses are. We all have them. We all have strengths and weaknesses. And I just try and stay very aware of what my weaknesses are and really pay attention to that in the hiring process to find people that fill the gap that I or someone else on the team cannot do. Well, this is what we need to bring in. And so that's what we, you know, with all the personality assessments that you're able to do, I think it's just really important to stay self-aware as well.
Absolutely. So thinking about other advice that you have for leaders, you know, economic development is a tricky field and it's hard to learn how to do this and learn how to do it well. And it's one of those professions that you almost have to get in and kind of learn as you go. What advice would you have somebody that's going into a leadership position in economic development for the first time?
Yeah. And I found this out 5 years ago is when Janet Miller, who had been at the chamber for 20 years, left and I'd worked for her and they were kind enough to, you know, I interviewed for the position. They offered me the position. So I was thrilled for that. But, you know, you quickly, as I told somebody recently, even that you realize that there's one kind of head of the economic development in that organization. And you realize that it's a little bit lonely at the top. And I had so much more understanding of what she went through and what other bosses that I'd had in this position have been through, because there's a face or there's an accountability component to that. And it can be really lonely. So my advice is always stay connected to either other people in the positions. One of the things that I've loved about economic development, probably my most favorite part, is the relationships that I've made across the country and in some cases globally with other people that work at other chambers. And I love that. Everybody will take your phone call. Everyone will talk to you about some similar issue that they're going through. And so even though our organizations tend to be small in our own community, and it's really hard to find people that understand our own kind of worlds, but there's one of us or there's teams of us everywhere. And so I love the ED conferences and I love just socializing and bouncing ideas off of my peers across the country.
Yeah, that's awesome. It is a really great peer group and it's fun to learn from people who are in different cities and in different communities, but doing similar work. It's like exciting to see hear the ideas and get the energy from other people. And some apply, some don't. But you're right. It is nice just to have people who, when you say I'm in economic development, they even know what you're talking about.
Exactly. Like you don't have to explain your career all of a sudden. It's wonderful to be able to, yes, we do this for a living and it's really good work.
Yes. Yes. Yep. I love that. So what are you doing? You said you're a podcast junkie. So we know you're listening to podcasts, but what else are you doing to continue to grow as a leader? And are there any certain like books or podcasts or conferences that you go to that you're like, that is something that I want to do every year? Or I really liked that and would recommend to somebody else.
Well, I'll do a shameless promotion, but economics is one of my favorites. It really is. It is so inspiring. And so just the only conference that I've been to in this field that, you know, aims to build up leaders in economic development. That is much appreciated. And I'm not just saying that because it was in Nashville recently. It's a great conference. And
well, thank you.
It's wonderful. And I wish I could go to many more. And I was that kind of person that could read books and constantly. My husband always has a leadership book next to his bedside table. And I just don't. I've got a trash book, something to escape.
Yep.
Escape all of that. And then, you know, aside, I love listening to podcasts of all kinds. My other guilty pleasure is true crime podcasts, which I hope we have that in common as well. But again, it's really it's a release for me, and it's a distraction for me. But back to leadership. So I try and learn something all the time. I am constantly, I've got peers within the chamber that I'm learning from. I'm learning from my team. I truly believe that I will never stop learning to be a leader. And sometimes I have to check myself and say, oh my gosh, I'm leading this team and this at this great organization. And I feel like I'm just, you know, part of the team. But there are responsibilities that come with my role. And I take that very seriously. And I try to learn from both good and bad examples of leadership that I see and read about and hear about. And I try and just absorb it all as much as I can and that's why podcasts are so good for my short attention span, that I can get little nuggets here and there. So that's really that's a look inside of my guilty pleasures, if you will.
I love it. So we call this America's Jobs Team podcast because we believe that jobs are the greatest force for change, or the greatest force for change is a job. And the economic developers are bringing that to their communities. They're bringing that change because they're, you know, working on that job creation engine. And it's happening all over in big metros, small metros, mid-sized metros, tiny little rural communities. Economic developers are doing this work in America to create this prosperity. What does it mean to you to be an American?
That was such an inspiring opening. I love that. I think, and that's exactly why I do this every day. And I'm privileged that we have these jobs available to us. But really, for me, it's about freedom. It's about freedom and opportunity, as cliche as that might sound, but it is about the fact that I can do all the things that I can do as a woman, the things that I can, all the equal rights that everyone has, all the freedom and liberties that we have. I never take that for granted, especially when I travel. It's just, I'm so excited about that opportunity for my children and I love that my job, you know, is so impactful on the American dream, if you will, because I believe wholeheartedly, like you just said, that job is really everything for an individual trying to have the opportunity just like I've had. So it's really about freedom, opportunity, and equal rights for me.
I love that. That's perfect. It's so well said and it's so true. And it's amazing to be able to do that here in this country that provides all of that for us and those opportunities. So as we close out the podcast, Courtney, I know this is probably going to be one of the hardest questions that I ask you because economic developers seem to be so humble, but I'm going to ask you to reflect on your career so far. And I know you have a lot more, you know, time left in you and there will be many, many great things to come. But if you had to think about what makes you most proud in your career, you know, as of right now, what is that kind of proud moment? Was there a certain project or a certain accomplishment that you had that you look back and you're like, you know, I'm really proud that I was able to participate in that and do that?
This is both because I have short-term memory and this is the most recent. And it's also because it is the largest project we've ever worked on as a team. And that is the Amazon HQ2. I mean, I think we've heard so much about it and we've gone through so much over the last several years since the announcement that, just as a refresher, Nashville was one of the finalists in that project. And then we ultimately won a 5,000 person center of excellence for supply chain logistics. And so I'm just so, not just about the project, because I think the project is going to be tremendous for Nashville and for our entire state and for our entire region. It's the largest job announcement in the state, certainly the largest in Nashville, of course. But all of that aside, the way that our team came together is what I'm most proud of. So I feel like it's a product of how we operate and how we work together. We spent, you know, the year of the HQ2 process really, you know, following other chambers and following other regions that were putting their proposals together. And we truly sat back in awe of how proud we were that we had so many of the elements in place that we could respond quickly. We could all divvy up our responsibilities. We could, you know, we could do this as a team and still work a lot of different other projects and really have fun doing it. And so for me, it ended up being 5,000 tremendous jobs for the Nashville region, but it was also demonstration of how our team has come together over the last 5 years since we've all been one group. And it was just a tremendous moment to be able to celebrate that together.
Yeah, that is an amazing thing to celebrate. And I'm glad that you brought it up because there's been so many communities that have participated in that HQ2 process. And even those that did not win and aren't walking away with the 5,000 jobs, that process really did bring a lot of communities together in a way that kind of tested that team and that grit behind the team and how well they can work together. And even how badly do they want something and do they want the right thing for their community? And I think it was kind of a testament of how teams can work. And it's great that your team was able to do that and that you not only have the 5,000 jobs, but as you say, you know, you now demonstrated all the years of hard work of like building a team that is, you think you're doing it good and that the team is going to be able to do it. But when push comes to shove, the fact that you actually did, you don't often get that like real tangible moment where you're like, yeah, the team is like, just killed it, you know? And this is like just a perfect example of building a team and then watching them to be able to execute on something transformational.
It was amazing. And we still, you know, even though it had an incredible outcome, we learned things from that as well. And I think, like you said, everybody learned, you know, their strengths and weaknesses through that process. And I think that was so valuable for everybody.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Courtney, for taking time out of your schedule to be on the podcast with us today. I truly enjoy every encounter that I have with you, whether we're at economics or we're catching up over the phone or doing podcasts. You're just always a pleasure to be around. I do think you put the fun in economic development and you always make me laugh and we have a lot in common. And I'm sure that the audience of the podcast is going to take away a lot of information and just leadership insight from you. So thank you so much for your time. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was really, really fun. And you're my new favorite podcast. So thank you.
I absolutely loved the conversation with Courtney today. I hope that you feel energized. Every time I talk to Courtney, I just feel a little bit more joy in my life and in my work. She's just truly not only an amazing leader, but she's just a good egg, just a really good, solid person. And I hope you took away some leadership insight from Courtney. I am really excited because we have another good egg on the podcast next week. We have a chance to have Carla Moran with us, and she lives in the Phoenix area. She works at the Salt River Project, which is a power company out in the greater Phoenix region. And she's been in economic development for 15 years, has worked in several different communities as well, and now is working for the power company. But Carla is a whole lot of fun, and she's also really, really smart. And one of the things that I've always just noticed about Carla is her ability to connect other people. And I hope that we are able to pick her brain on how she's able to do that and how her career is allowing her to impact lives and impact the community in the Phoenix area. So you're definitely not going to want to miss next week's podcast with Carla Moran.